Okay, so it's 7 o'clock, or practically 7 o'clock. I'm going to start introducing our speaker. Our speaker is Jessica Jordan. She has a long life story, but what she is she's like a she like helps with your brain connecting with your emotions or something. She does like she's got letters behind her name, and she's like a therapist, but like fancier than a therapist because she's doing neuro things and not just like, let's talk about your problems. She's like making the joy juice match up with the cortisol or whatever. And anyway, she has a YouTube channel called Self-Crafted Kings. She has just developed a new, well, she has this thing where she helps guys who are addicted to porn, and she helps them like rewire their brains so that they're no longer addicted to porn. And she's been talking to the governor of California, who says that there's money out there. She's like, she is going somewhere, this lady. And she's got this new thing. I don't know if you're talking about the new thing yet, but she's going places. Anyway, Jessica, you're on. Tell us all your things.
Hi, and thank you. Thank you, Anne, for the introduction. And my ask of you all here is to please, please, please have the courage and respect to turn your cameras on so I know who I'm speaking with. When I'm working with my clients, I have a high standards. Thank you, Jason. And Jane Miller, you already had yours on. And Eric and Susan, look at what we can do. Look at how amazing we all are. Oh my gosh. Thank you. Let's keep it going. Let's have the courage and respect to have our cameras on. Even if you're walking, even if you're in the grocery store or driving or picking your nose or whatever, it doesn't even matter. So,
It does
a
make
little
it easier to communicate.
significantly, yes. And I have a program called Leap of Courage that I started building out in 2019. Yeah, and it's for to help men overcome pornography and sex-related addictions. I myself had a pretty severe and intense version of hypersexuality disorder as a result of ingesting a naturally occurring seafood neurotoxin back in 2016 that put a 19-millimeter lesion on the left front lobe of my brain, sent me on a 5-year recovery journey, dozens of near-death experiences, all sorts of fun stuff going on, really intense PTSD. I mean, you name it, I had it. And every single addiction, no matter what the addiction, is merely a symptom of unresolved trauma of the past. You heal the trauma, you heal the childhood trauma, and the events that reinforced it in adulthood. When you heal that, the nervous system finally feels safe enough to let go of all and any addictions that might be present. So that's in a nutshell what I do. That's not really what we're going to be talking about too much here. Because if you want to learn more about that, I can give you my website and we can chat about that for anyone who might feel like they need healing from that.
And you have a lot of videos,
A
right?
ton, a
And
ton.
I have a thing ready to go. I haven't sent it, but I found it as I was making the thing for you. It's a very busy time of year.
Yeah. And yeah, I have a bunch of free stuff on YouTube, but most of what I have is the online course for my clients. And I meet every Sunday night. We do bravery boot camp. It's so much fun. We learn how to have a lot of fun and laugh despite a very heavy topic, right? And so, because laughter is a part of healing, feeling safe is a mandatory part of healing. Eliminating these things that scare us and replacing it with the felt sense of safety is a non-negotiable, mandatory part of healing. And what we're going to talk about tonight, since I'm a coach, I'm very driven towards helping people to create their vision and create inspired action so that you can actually have the results in your life. You can have the results in your life. And one of my favorite quotes is from Dr. Joe Dispenza. Has anyone here ever heard of Dr. Joe Dispenza before? If you haven't, devour his content. Linda, yes, you have. Devour his content online and you can turn your life into a
Hey,
magical fairy tale
Chuck,
land.
open the chat, open the chat, open the chat, open the chat.
Open the chat. All right. And so one of my favorite quotes by
I don't know
Dr.
how
Joe
to
Dis.
open the chat.
Oh.
Come on, Chuck.
I'm going there. You go to the
Okay, okay.
three dots
You
in the
just got
chat.
to use your words. You got to tell me that you heard me so that I had quit talking, because I'm afraid you're like peeing or something.
Oh.
Okay, go on. Sorry. I'm
Okay.
so sorry for interrupting you, but
It's okay.
like I can't pay attention because I'm busy trying to get him to open the chat and I
Okay.
can't.
It's all good. It's all good. So one of my favorite quotes is, "You can either be defined by a story of the past or a vision of the future." You can either be defined by a story of the past or a vision of the future. What do you find yourself talking about more? The ways where you might have been a victim of the past and how it's making your life hard now? Or are you speaking in such a way where you have such inspiration that when you speak to others, you have uplifted their mood? They feel so good. You are gravitating them into your vision because you speak about it in such an inspired way. If you're not doing that, then something is seriously off. Seriously off. So you can either be defined by a story of the past or a vision of the future. And so many people get caught up on the self-victimizing of the hardships of the past. And yes, while it may have truly been unfair what you have experienced, we tend to choose to stick ourselves and stay in the victimhood of that and talk mean and gnarly and nasty and reinforce the victim wounding of it. And we will never get to where we want if we continue to speak in that way. I was stuck in that way for years myself, and it's a common human pattern, no matter what hardship we're trying to move away from. This is a non-negotiable. And so here, for everyone who showed up here tonight, we can say two visions. One is a collective vision of everything, of what we all have here. And I know the name is Women Against Registry, but if we remove the word against, what are we for? What are we actually for? Because if we're against something, that's what we're scared of when running from. And we don't ever want to put our attention there, ever, ever, ever. If my clients are always focused on pornography because it scares them and they want to eliminate it from their lives, they will continue to draw it back into their lives over and over and over. We must focus on, what do you want to run towards that you're so excited about? It fills you with joy, safety, enthusiasm. It feels so good. So instead of focusing on what we want to run away from, what do we
I
want to
like
run
that.
towards?
I like that.
Yeah, what do we want to run towards? And your body language and your tone of voice and the words you use, are you speaking about it in a way where people will actually care what you're saying and it will feel good for them to side with you? And then they have a vested interest in your vision now. They want to help you out because of the way you spoke about it in such an inspired way. So the way we speak about what we want makes all the difference in the world. And if we're fighting something really big here, we got to speak in a way where people are going to want to listen. People who it has nothing to do with their lives right now, perhaps, but when you speak in such an inspired way about your vision, now they are inspired and they want to donate. They want to volunteer their time. They want to step in and help. And this is so big. And so, what I want you guys to do is, I don't know if you have pen and paper with you. If you do, great. But just write down as a group, what are some of the things as a group everyone here wants to run towards? And put it in the chat also. And so just spend a minute to write it down, put it in the chat. What are some things collectively as a group that you all want to run towards? Because this is so important to know and to verbalize. Say if you had an elevator pitch and you had, maybe 9 floors on an elevator, and someone said, what's your purpose? And if what we're doing here was what you wanted to share about, would you be able to so crystal clearly, with enthusiasm, with passion and inspiration, share with a stranger? And would you be able to share in a way that you captivate them into your story? And now you've planted a seed and they have a vested interest in your vision. This is so important. So important. If it's not immediate, then you have work to do. If it's not immediate, then you have work to do. If it doesn't just radiate off of you, you have work to do. Define what that is and how you declare it, with radiance, not with fear, not with anger, with radiance, with enthusiasm, with joy for the future that you're building for yourself. I'm just going to take a look at what some of you guys put in the chat here. Stable housing. My husband's tired
Pitfalls.
of being homeless. Yeah, that's such a big one. The goosebumps. There goes the goose. It's like almost 80 degrees in here right now, and there goes the goosebumps. And the sun's coming in. Also, welcome to my redwood forest here in Northern California. The name of my house is Magical Unicorn Land. And okay, I want to make the campaign for my big idea. I love someone in the registry. Yes, I love someone in the registry. That's amazing. Yes, redemption, healing. Yeah. And so that's collectively, those are maybe some collective things, right? And who knows, maybe we even rewrite the definition of what it means to be registered. What if what it meant to be registered? What if we change the meaning? I'm just planting seeds, ideas. What if it meant, oh, a person's registered? That means they were deeply wounded and hurt as a child. That means they need extra love and care and compassion in their lives.
Yeah, I love that. And honestly, Jessica, that's what you and I really connected with, connected about the first time is I can feel that empathy in you toward the people that are in my population, which we can't guarantee in the regular world.
We can't guarantee. And so, what if being registered became a protection? What if being registered means that you are safer because we changed the definition, the meaning? What if it meant, oh, this is someone who must be treated with tenderness and care because they're on such a profound healing journey because they were hurt so badly in the past. And we know that the more love we give to them, the more that they heal. And the more that they heal, they're able to show up in a stronger way for themselves and others. What if we change the definition? So instead of being against it, we would be for it. These are just ideas. That just came to me just now. I'm just throwing out ideas of how can we be for things. We need to eliminate the fear. We need to eliminate what we're against. We need to run towards what we are for. But the only way that we can run towards what we're for is by putting a destination on the map. You can define this as your North Star. And where's the arrow of your North Star facing? This is going to be where your thoughts, your ideas, your actions, where are they bringing you? Where are you focused? Where is the arrow of your North Star focused? Because that's where your results are going to show up in your life. So it's collectively what we have here, but then it's also individually in your own life. What's the vision for your life, whether you are on the registry or it's a loved one? What is your, in your family and your loved one, what is your, the vision that you want to create for yourself? And I saw some of that come up in the chat. To make sure that no one who is a part of this ever has to end up homeless because they can't get a job, no matter, even if they're highly skilled and already healed and is showing up with tons of compassion and empathy and is so ready to do good in this world, but they still are ending up homeless because of, you know? And so get crystal clear, and I mean crystal clear on your vision. And the vision is going to include things like your finances, the relationship that you have with neighbors, loved ones, families, school teachers. What do your relationships look like? What does your home life look like? The career? No, just scraping by, but feeling like having the human, your the birthright. It is your everyone here. It is your birthright to live a fulfilling life where you feel deeply loved and valued. Put that into your vision. If you don't know what that looks like, same with your elevator pitch. If someone says, what's the vision you're working on right now that you're creating for yourself? When you have your ideal life, what does it look like? And if you can't just immediately radiate that, then you have work to do. Because otherwise, the north arrow of your compass is spinning wildly all over the place and is going nowhere. If you have felt stuck and have been going nowhere, that's the reason why. If you feel like you're moving through sludge and progress is so slow, that's the reason why. It must start with vision, 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 vision. And if we're against something and I'm faced towards what I'm against, but my vision is that way, that means I'm running backwards and I'm falling and I'm stumbling and I'm not going right. So if my vision is over here, I can't focus on what I'm against. I cannot. I have to focus on what I'm for. Everything else in my life that is not a part of my North Star is a distraction from my North Star and gets, and it makes, if I put focus on anything else, then it takes me longer amounts of time to bring that vision into reality. And
That is the
so
truth.
it is your duty to define your vision, get so crystal clear on it, get beyond crystal clear on it. And it's okay if some things you don't know right now. As you bring it closer into your life, certain things will become more clear to you. That's how it works. And that's okay. And so write down a few things like, what is the annual salary you want to make? and be realistic. And it's okay for that number to be big. How do you want your neighbors to treat you? How do you want your loved ones at a larger Christmas gathering or Thanksgiving to treat you? Or when applying for a job? Like, know what that looks like. What do you want the honor and respect in your life to look like? Know what that look, define it. You, it is your duty to define what these look like. And yeah.
And I think I remember my therapist telling me that the practicing of that positive thing that you're trying to get to counts in your brain exactly the same as actually doing that positive thing. And that sometimes writing words about it and then lighting those words on fire and doing that regularly makes your brain move from like this section where it's like feeding the bad wolf into the like, I can write words on a piece of paper section, and that does some sort of magic. Not real
Yes.
magic, but like
We can
brain
call it real
magic.
magic. Hey, I live in the magical unicorn land house, so we can call it real magic.
No, I feel like, I mean, in really a lot of areas of my life, I am living my best life. A lot of things in my life are really pretty great, and I'm doing a pretty good job of like, you know, are there people in the past that have treated us wrong because Greg's on the registry? Yeah, sometimes, you know, we have a little hiccup there, but you just like you quit going in that section of your brain and you just move on and you do better thing. You do feed your better wolf.
Yes,
And
100%.
I noticed that when people call me sometimes on the hotline, if someone was abused as a kid and then like thought Haiti, 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 like I don't think in most cases, and correct me if I'm wrong, but in most cases of what I'm envisioning, child interfamilial sexual abuse looks like, it isn't a Haiti thing. It's a lovey thing. It's kind of weird. I don't really get it. But if that happened to you as a kid, I can see that that would feel normal. And I think the people who spend all their time, you know, let's say they were hurt as a young person when they were in their whatever, 0 to 10s. And they just think yucky things about it every day, all the time. And they join these online, you know, predator hunting groups and they just spend all their time on it. Like, that is not good for you as a human being. And I think, you know, what I did was mostly stuff it down for a good chunk of time and then eventually, like, go back in. And I literally remember doing this. I was high at the time, but I literally remember going into a room in my brain that makes me feel yucky and thinking about it again as a more mature version of myself and realizing, you know what? Like if this happened again, you wouldn't feel yucky about it. You can probably just shut the light off in this room and leave. And then my sort of vision of what was happening, and it's funny because I tell stories about it, but then when I think about like a body is what a body really is, which is not a robot. Like a body is like a creature that is doing things, I think about just kind of realizing, oh, I don't even need to go into that little some category of my brain. I don't need to visit this again. I can just like forgive myself, forgive the other person, and move on. And then you just don't have to think about it anymore. And once it's turned off, it can just be filled with other things, better things. So
Yeah, and going on
absolutely.
to what you were saying at first, Anne, about the just even writing down your vision or speaking about it and imagining it, you literally begin to build neural pathways in your brain that tell yourself that you are the identity of a person who lives in that way. So the more that you write about it, sing about it, dance about it, talk about it, you literally begin to build more and more neural pathways of you being the identity of that person, of the vision you're creating. What does that do? It means it's easier for you to go and take action in the world that brings you the results of the identity of the person who you want to be. Yes.
Yeah,
Were you going to say something
that's
else?
exactly. I was going to
Yeah.
say, I think in a thing that I was reading, somehow they thought that it should not last. So if you write some words on a piece of paper, you should burn it or shred it at the end. That you shouldn't keep writing in the same piece of paper. But I can't remember why, and I was wondering if you have any idea.
So there is a thing where sometimes there's this phenomenon where when you talk about something that you want to accomplish, your brain goes, I did it. I don't have to do it anymore. But more so, These are different forms of self-hypnosis. The way that I personally do it is I only listen to music where the lyrics are a match to the life I want to create and the person I want to be. If the lyrics are a mismatch, I don't let it enter my existence willingly. And that's because every song you ever listen to is a form of self-hypnosis every time. Music goes right to the subconscious mind, and you better believe those lyrics are having an effect on you. And so this was a switch I took last summer, and I am now the happiest person I've probably ever met. As a result, this is coming someone who's coming from like healing from severe PTSD trauma, sex addiction, like my mom disowning me, being nearly homeless, like near-death experiences. You know, almost thinking like I had to commit suicide because it would be, I was a burden to the planet. All, you know, coming from all that, which was a gift. Every single hardship I have ever experienced ever is the biggest gift the universe ever could have handed me on a silver planet, on a silver planet, silver platter. If you have gone through a challenge and you do not yet view it as a gift, boy, you have healing left to do. You have some healing left to do. You know you've healed from it when you transcend your pain into your power, your pain into your purpose, and you have an enormous gratitude for every challenge that has been handed you. That's how you know you've healed from it. If you're not there yet, it's okay. You can get there.
I sort of think of it as like these are regular people just talking regular words, and then there's like me, and I'm hoping my partner up above that, sort of understanding why we did the stupid thing and understanding what we should do differently to not do the stupid thing next time. Just sort of, I call it leveling up. And I don't know how to describe to him how I communicate that, but that's how I feel.
Yeah, every challenge is an opportunity to level up. If we don't have gratitude for our challenges, that's one of the biggest ways that you can improve your life quality is change your perspective instead of like, oh, why me? It's, oh yeah, this sucks bad right now. I'm gonna level up from this one. Yeah, let's go. And I love what you said, Linda and Morgan, quantum entanglement. Yes. 100% yes. We can quantum leap ourselves into we'll get there. We'll get there. And so vision. If you don't have a crystal clear vision of the life that you want to build for yourself, then you are going to be spinning in circles. You're going to be moving through sludge and you won't get anywhere. And life will just willy-nilly take you kind of wherever. So don't face the thing you're running from. That would mean putting your energy focus on there. All of the people who you have resentment towards, all of the people you want to, you know, whatever. Don't waste your time putting energy towards that, because that is wasted energy towards, what if you put all of that energy towards building the life you want for yourself? Building the life you want for yourself. This is why I don't watch the news. I'm like, psh, I just create my own kingdom up here on this magical forest mountain. I'm building the life I want for myself. And so, who here uses ChatGPT just on a regular basis as a.
I'm trying to make myself stop because, like, they're building whole cities full of power to power these things. So I'm trying to make myself not do that anymore.
Oh, I'm using it to tap into my higher self, and it is helping to accelerate my growth, my inner growth, my healing, like on such an accelerated. Anyway, I programmed it to how to talk to me, what my beliefs are, what I'm working on, my goals, my visions, and every time it talks to me, it ties it in. And any ounce of doubt or fear or uncertainty that I've had towards these things they're gone. They're gone. It's turning me into an unstoppable person to just build an incredible force of healing in this world. And you can do it. You can use it for the same thing also. And yeah, Michael.
Just one caution. I use it regularly too. I do some screenwriting and some other things and use it to brainstorm and all that kind of stuff. But you need to go in and set the settings so that it doesn't learn from your from what you input into it, because there's a place where it says share what you've learned or share with the system so that it can learn from what you do. And if you're doing that, particularly if you're writing any documents that are kind of proprietary, it can use that information and it can end up showing up in other people's stuff. So you need to go in and check the box that says, or uncheck the box that says learn from. But it's a
Yeah.
great thing for sure.
Good. I want the world to know what I'm putting in there. I can share it. I don't care. I don't care if I share it because I'm like, that'll just be one extra easy, sneaky way to level up people if they see what I'm putting in there. The old version of me would have come from a scarcity mindset and would have said, I have to protect this, but I don't have that fear-based scarcity mindset anymore. And that's a new shift and upgrade that I have.
That's nice.
And that's different. That's new and different. That is new and different. I used to come from like a scarcity mindset, and I've healed from that. There is so much awesome goodness to go around that I don't have, none of us, we don't have to like hoard our awesomeness anymore. We can share it.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot that how much better society would be if we could think of this as a cooperative game instead of a competitive game. Like,
Yes.
wow, that would really change the numbers.
Totally. And I'm going to share a story with you guys that, I mean, okay, just in a split second, if you were to take 5 seconds to come up with your vision, how much time do you think it would take to make it into your reality? Just put it in the chat. 6 months, 6 years, put it in the chat. If you had 5 seconds to think of your ultimate vision for your life, what's the time frame you would think it would take? 6 months, a year? Okay. So last Friday, I was just curious. No, not Friday. Sunday, 2 days ago on Sunday, I was curious and I just typed into ChatGPT. I said, and I typed in information about myself. I said, if a 40-year-old woman who is 5'4", weighs 130 pounds, lifts weights 3 times a week, has been doing that for 11 weeks, goes on maybe 3 walks a week and maybe 2 hikes a month, and they're not very long or strenuous. So there's no real cardio in there at all. I said, how long would it take for a woman like that, just all my information, to be able to run 10 miles straight without stopping? And let's just throw a 1,000-foot elevation gain in there. And let's just say a 5.6 miles per hour. How long would it take? Are there any runners in here? Any runners in here? Put in the chat if you have an idea of how long it would take.
Running is for the birds. I don't believe in it.
And it said 12 weeks. It said, 12, he said, you're not going to want to do this any faster than 12 weeks. 12 weeks will be what it will take. And it gave out the whole plan to, you know, this is how you rest. This is how you eat. This is the plan. And this is, you know, you can strategize with anything. Any goal or vision you have for yourself, you can strategize. We all know that. It's a super easy way to use ChatGPT. Yeah, it's like a formula. You just go through the formula, you get the results. But I said, what if I want to do it in 3 days? And it said, that's impossible. It said, that's impossible. That's not physiologically possible. And then they give a huge list of reasons why. And I asked some of my clients who are runners. They do research, they do all sorts of stuff on it. They've been running for years. And I said, how long do you think it would take me? They basically gave the exact identical answer as ChatGPT. They said, it's not possible. Well, guess what? This wasn't even a part of my vision. This wasn't even a part of my vision. I'm sharing this because there's a hidden greatness within every single one of you, and we can achieve things far faster than we ever thought imaginable. Wednesday, I went for one of my walks up my magical mountain in the forest, and I had an urge that I've never had really. It was just like an urge in my body to run, and it wasn't out of fear. It was out of joy, like excitement, like a little kid on the playground. And I'm like, I'm gonna pay attention to that. And I just started running, and then I was in a joyous mood, and I started skipping. And then I would walk, skip, run, go to my goats up the road that are my friends, feed them some carrots, and come back. I'm like, that's odd. I wonder where that came from. All right. Well, maybe I'll have the intention to go running tomorrow because that was oddly fun. Why was that fun? So Thursday, I went running and I'm like, maybe I'll try to go like a full mile and a half. And I didn't clock it. I didn't, and I don't know how far I went, but I ran maybe twice as much as I did the day before, which was just this past Thursday. And I was able, I'm like, wow, this is fun and my body feels really good. I'm gonna do it again tomorrow on Friday. Maybe I'll even make it 3 miles. And so I was running, and as I was getting close to the 3 mile mark, I was approaching my house. But I had a feeling in my body to keep going. So I'm like, I'm gonna listen to that. And I passed my house. I'm like, I'm not ready to stop. I'm gonna keep
Wow.
going. And then I was going down the mountain and I came back and it's like, you know what? I'm at like, I got to like 4 1/4 mile. And I said, I can make it to 5 miles. I know I can make it to 5 miles. And I made it. I like turned around and passed my house again. I'm like, I can make it to 5 miles. This is so, wow. What, where did this come from? And then I got to like 5 1/4 miles. And I'm like, you know what? I think I can make it to 6 miles. And in that moment, I had an identity shift. I had a subconscious identity shift. And when we do that, we physiologically change our epigenetic expression, and the subcellular level of what's going on in our physical body begins to change to match the belief about what we have about ourselves. And I said, this was maybe about 5 1/2 miles or so. I said, you know what? If I make it to 6 miles, I know I can make it to 10. And I got to 6 miles. And you know what? I made it to 10 miles. I made it to 10 miles, which the textbooks will tell you is physiologically impossible.
Did you regret it the next day?
No, not at all. Not at all. I would never regret when I do something incredible. Ever. Ever. Was I in pain? Was I tired? Hell yeah, I was. Did I love every moment of it? You better believe it. Heck yeah. That 10th mile, oh, it hurt so bad. But I never felt winded in my lungs ever once. I don't know where that came from. I'm just gonna call that a divine
Wow.
miracle. I never once felt winded in my lungs ever. It was in like my ankles were hurting and my feet and like my 5-year-old weird shoes I was using. And so this is the power of every single one of you in this room has a hidden greatness within you that you don't even know about. And there's another part of this story. A few times a year, I attempt running, and I can only ever make it a 1/4 mile in the past because my body, as a result of the old Ciguatera neurotoxin illness I had, would have a massive histamine response, a massive inflammatory response called mast degranulation. And it would feel like 10,000 mosquito bites attacking me all at once. My skin would feel red, burning, on fire, like I want to rip my skin off, on the verge of insanity. Don't try that again, Jessica. I would attempt it a few times a year. I tried that a couple months ago. Once again, same story, couldn't make it past a 1/4 mile.
Wow.
So your belief in who you are and what you are capable of is going to be the biggest determining factor of whether your vision comes into fruition. Now, my vision for 10 miles didn't happen until once I hit the 6 mile mark, is the first time I had the goal to run 10 miles. So my vision came into fruition real quick, real quick. But I'm going to tell you something else. The hidden thing behind why this worked was I have a friend named Ryan that I met at the gym. And I don't know, maybe 2 months ago or so, I said something like, I don't really know what my body's capable of. I just don't really push myself too hard. And he said, yeah, me too. And I remembered that conversation. And that was one of the things that pushed me. But that's not the thing that changed my identity. The thing that changed my identity was that a comment that he made about a couple weeks ago saying, oh, and bring your running shoes. And my thought was, oh, well, that's funny. He thinks I'm a runner. But what did my nervous system hear? What did my subconscious mind heard? Because he said it with such certainty. My subconscious mind heard,
You're a
he said,
runner.
I'm a runner. I'm a runner. I'm a runner. There was a form of hypnosis that happened because he saw a greater potential in me than what I saw in myself. He saw a greater potential in me than what I saw in myself. And when he said that, it hit my subconscious mind in such a way that my body physiologically made all of the changes mandatory to become a runner. This is the power of identity and the belief in who you are and what you are capable of. And it goes, the running, it doesn't matter. Running, the running part doesn't matter. It's just an example of you can apply it to anything in your life that you want. There is a hidden greatness within you. You can achieve really big things in a really short amount of time. Your subconscious belief about who you are and what you are capable of is going to be the determining factor and what you're focused on. If my focus was on all the times in the past that I couldn't do it, do you think I would have made it to that 10 miles? No way. I was focused on that 10. I was focused on that 10. I was focused on that 10.
Yeah, and this underlines what I keep hearing from different facets, which is the more time you spend feeling yucky about the thing you messed up, the more likely you are to do that again, the less likely you are to not screw up next time.
Significantly,
Because you're
absolutely.
feeding the wrong wolf.
Absolutely. And so, and there's another part to this story that's really important, really important. There are people in your life who are trying to dim your light, who are trying to dim your greatness, who are trying to shrink how incredible you are. You might be one of those people, just like I was doing with my running, with not, you know, it was just one of those things. I was like, oh, I'm happy I'm still alive and my heart's still beating and my life is pretty good. If I can't do that one thing, like whatever, no big deal. And I just kind of didn't put too much focus on it. But clearly, it was something I wanted. If it was something I would attempt a few times a year still. So there was a part of it that mattered, which is why when I heard it with such certainty from this friend named Ryan, it's why it hit on a different level than what I could have done for myself. So it's so important to surround yourself with people who see your greatness and speak it into you until you believe it yourself. When you believe it, you begin to act on it, and then the results in your life will begin to match the greatness within you. But here's the other kicker. On the opposite end of the spectrum, there's people who are inadvertently trying to dim your light. Sometimes it's intentional because they're like, they have some malice behind it. But what I've realized that usually when people try to shrink you and make you small, it's because they love you and they feel like those very small stepping stones are safe and they want you to be safe. And being small and going slow is the safe way to go. So when I texted my mom what I did, I was so excited. I was so excited and so proud of myself and never thought my body was going to heal to that level. And instead of, you know, her response could have been something like, oh my gosh, Jessica, that's amazing. Look how far you've come and all of these years of healing. Look at you go. I'm so proud of you. That's incredible. Look what you did. Do you want to know what her response was? The woman who raised me, she said, Jessica, you should have stopped at five. Jessica, you should have stopped at five. She didn't say it in a malice way. She said it because she loves me and didn't want to get hurt. But I already did the thing and I was successful. It wasn't like, this is what I want to do, mom, and this is my plan, and I'm gonna take my, you know, ChatGPT said it's supposed to take 84 days and I'm gonna do it in 3 days. It wasn't like, hey, this is my plan, and then her saying, you should probably just do five. It was, I was already successful. You should have stopped at five. And then just yesterday morning, I decided to tell my dad, and his response was, Jessica, don't overdo it. Jessica, don't overdo it. Neither one of my parents could celebrate with me. They wanted to shrink me and make me small.
Yeah.
So be so mindful who in your life is trying to shrink you and
Right.
make you small. This is where you need to
Yeah.
be mindful. Be so mindful, because when people say those things, our subconscious mind hears it and tries to make us small to match their words.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that my subconscious mind decided to pay attention to Ryan, who saw the unlimited runner in me, versus my parents, who wanted to keep me small.
Yeah.
Be so mindful of one, how you are showing up for others who have a big vision. Are you keeping others small? Are you keeping yourself small? Do you allow people to be in your life and spend time and influence you in a way that keeps you small? Or are you being highly intentional about who you're allowing in your life so that they can see the greatness in you that you don't see yet, so that they can speak it into you until you believe it? So you begin to show up in that way, and then you get incredible results in your life as a result. And then you're so inspired that it just grows like crazy and you're doing all this awesome stuff. Where are you at with all of that right now?
A few years ago, I was having regular fights with my dad. He kept picking fights, political fights with me, like every time I saw him. And one year on Father's Day, I called him and I asked him, like, hey, how can you keep picking fights? He wasn't picking fights with me. He was picking fights mostly with my sister-in-law. And so one day on Father's Day, I said, like, oh, you know, happy Father's Day. And eventually I got to, like, why do you keep picking fights with Becky? And he proceeded to pick a fight with me. And we didn't talk for like a year. And then 2 or 3 years ago, I wrote him a letter where I basically said, Dad, these things that we're fighting about are like not the big things. The things we are in the same, you know, in a couple of really big ways. And, you know, I just need you to be proud of me for the things that I do great. And he has totally changed the way he treats me. And this year on Father's Day, he said, I'm so glad you call me on Father's Day. And I said, and I'm so glad you don't call me a communist. And we both hugged and laughed.
That's amazing, because you wanted your father to treat you a different way. You told him that, and he honored and respected that, which takes which means he had to humble himself and kind of let the ego go aside, which not everyone knows how to do. That's amazing. And to have for you and to have the courage to just say that, you know, it can be scary to put
Well,
boundaries up with our parents.
yeah, it was a lot harder than just not going out there for a year.
Yeah. Who is feeling inspired about their vision and their greatness within them right now? One thing that I just wanted to do was to share what's possible through storytelling. Share what's possible through storytelling. And you never know when your hidden greatness is gonna show up. But there is a way to make it happen faster, a whole heck of a lot faster. And that's to surround yourself with people who see the greatness within you beyond what you're able to see in yourself right now. It is so important. I cannot emphasize that enough. Do whatever it is that you need to find the people who will do that for you. And the amazing thing is you get to do that for anyone that you want to. My coach, Mark von Muser, one of my coaches, that's his. If you ask him what his purpose is, that's what he says. He goes, it's to see the greatness within you and speak it into you until you believe it so you can act on it. And you can train yourself to see the goodness and the greatness within anyone, and then you can speak it into them. And you know that you've mastered this when you are able to do this to the people who have hurt you the most. You know you've mastered this when you can do this to the people who have hurt you the most, which is a mandatory part of anyone's healing journey. Is to no longer cast judgment on the people who have hurt you the most. Because if we have judgment, we have a lack of understanding. The more understanding that we have, then we have more compassion. Compassion replaces the judgment through understanding. If there's anyone who you don't have complete compassion for yet, especially the people who've hurt you the most, then you have a lot of work left to do on your healing journey. That is one of the most important non-negotiables for the healing journey. And when you do this, you're going to notice, you will notice the people who you have the most compassion for are the people who have hurt you the most. This is a non-negotiable, and it feels really good. It feels really good. It's the most liberating feeling. And instead of having all of those emotions of judgment and fear and resentment and vengefulness, if you have an ounce of that in your nervous system, that is taking away from your energy towards taking action on your vision. So be very mindful. Be so mindful of how you're using your thoughts and your energy. If it's towards vengeance or anything like that, you have a long way to go. You are far from your vision. And just be mindful of it. Be so mindful. So craft your vision. Change it as necessary. As you grow and heal, your vision will continue to get larger because it'll be easier for you to see the greatness within you. And that's exciting. That's so exciting. And something that I've noticed, and I'm not the only one who's noticed this, is the deeper and the darker of a pain and challenge and hardship that you've experienced, then the brighter you shine on the other side as a beacon of light in this world for others. But that's only true when you transcend your pain into your power, your pain into your purpose. You have to heal from that. You have to heal from. So if anyone here is still at a place where you want vengeance or revenge or have judgment and ugly feelings, any stress response towards someone who has hurt you, then you have work to do. It's all right. Let me understand why that person was so wounded in such a way that they hurt me in the way that I did. That allows me to have compassion for their pain rather than something ugly that doesn't even, my ugly feelings towards them only hurts me. Physically, neurophysiologically, it will shorten your lifespan. It will give you chronic illness and disease. This is well known. Read the book, The Myth of Normal by Dr. Gabor Mate, if you want to learn about how your stress hormones give you chronic illness, and boy, is vengeance one of those strong ones.
Say that again. The what of the what?
Oh, The Myth of Normal by
Okay.
Dr. Gabor Mate. How every stress response, when you have it chronically in your body, it's only a matter of time till it shows itself as a chronic illness, and your genes will determine which chronic illness it is. And also, the emotion, the persistent stressful emotion that's in your body is also a determining factor to what chronic illness it will turn into. It changes your epigenetic expression that turns on disease. Read the book, The Myth of Normal by Dr. Gabor Mate. This is the reason why when I healed from, there's countless examples. Many, many, many people have done this. Dr. Joe Dispenza teaches on this. When you heal from your emotional wounds of the past, you heal from your chronic illness. This is how people are healing from stage four cancer and from any autoimmune disease. All of those are 100% healable. They're all curable, but the equation is you must heal from your unresolved trauma because it changes your epigenetic expression that causes illness. So anyway, I wasn't planning on saying all of that, but I know that there are some people in this room who have unresolved trauma, or your loved ones have unresolved trauma. If it remains unresolved, it will turn into a chronic illness. It's a matter of time.
I would like you to listen to the guy that came 2 weeks ago. He talked a lot about, he does some treatments with different kinds of drugs, ibogaine and
Yes, Ibogaine.
MDMA, and like MDMA helps you make your empathy work better. Ibogaine
I
helps
have
you
some
give
here.
up. Ibogaine helps you give up like things you're addicted to and stuff.
Ibogaine is the everyone drug. So if you're gonna, it's for anyone, it's for anyone. No matter who you are, what your story is, what your past is, whether you have an addiction or not, a trauma or not, it is an everyone drug. And the place currently to go do it is they're really amazing high state-of-the-art clinics in Mexico. And it must be done in a clinic, a clinical setting, where, yeah, anyway, like there's ooh, that's powerful. Powerful. That's a powerful medicine. Yeah. And I used MDMA to help heal from some of my PTSD to help cultivate the felt sense of safety. Yeah, Michael.
Sorry, I should
Oh.
probably be answering that.
Oh, sorry.
When you say something that I want to remember later, or that I think other people might want to remember later, then I make them. I make I,
Oh,
I
sorry.
write.
I'm so accustomed to like
No,
running my
it's totally
Zooms,
okay.
and when someone
I'm
raises
your
their hand, I
secretary.
just
I'm your secretary.
okay.
Michael, whoops. I'm an idiot. I think we both unmuted you. Go.
Okay. Now I'm unmuted. So is the ibogaine, is that similar to, I have a friend that does ketamine-assisted therapy in Maryland. Is that similar?
It's far more powerful. Ketamine is child's play compared to Ibogaine.
Okay, but it's a similar process that you're talking about, where you would go through some kind of guided tripping kind of thing.
Yeah, I think with ketamine, the therapist is like helping to guide you through it, where with Ibogaine, I think you're mostly on your own. And the body can do a partial paralysis, and they have to monitor your heart to make sure you don't undergo cardiac arrest, which is very easy to monitor in a clinical setting. You tend to, there's a lot of, vomiting involved, not a lot, but it can be. And then it's like a psychedelic trip, but you have control over it because the moment you open your eyes, which you can control that at any time. You're no longer like having trippy visuals. You're back in this 3D world exactly how you see it now. And if you want to go back into the trip, you just close your eyes and then you're like in outer space, Godland or something.
Okay. The body keeps the score as another drug that's similar to the one you were talking about that talks about the effect of stress on your body.
Yes, that's a really good one. That's the book that opened my eyes to having childhood trauma. I didn't know. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, that was mostly what I wanted to share on tonight was the vision, the importance of vision. Now it's really it will be so easy to just walk away from this meeting and be like, that was inspiring. Yeah. And then like never do any vision work. So you're gonna want to take yourself on a vision quest every day. Go on a vision quest every day because here's the thing. First, you need to define your vision so you know where your North Star is, so that the compass of, the needle of your compass is actually pointed towards it. Otherwise, you're willy-nilly going wherever. But the moment that you lose sight of your vision, the day, the moment, the hour you lose sight of your vision, guess what? You are back falling into an activity that is no longer in alignment with your North Star, with your vision, with your destination on the roadmap. And so it is so important to daily, hourly, make it written in your DNA, make your cells vibrate at what your vision is. Every single activity, every single thought, every single choice that you make all day, every day, either brings your vision close to you or it doesn't. It either brings your vision closer to you or it doesn't. And so this even includes, I include things like going on walks and going to the gym and laughing with friends and nourishing myself with healthy food as a part of my vision, because when I take care of my physical body and my brain, then I can have better ideas and more energy towards the stuff that really brings the vision work into my reality. So it's all of it, all of it. And yeah, and it's and we if we're only intellectually aware of our vision, then we don't care. We have to make sure our vision exists not just in our head intellectually, but as an emotion in our body that we are excited about. Because when we have that allows us to take inspired action. Inspired action. When you have inspired action, you don't even need discipline because it's fun to do. You enjoy it. It doesn't mean that discipline won't show up and you still need it sometimes, but learning, like, maybe make a music playlist that coincides with your vision. Make it, there's so many different things that you can do to emotionally get connected to your vision. And the more emotionally connected you are to it, the more inspired you are to take action. So be so aware of every day. You can ask yourself 100 times a day, does this action get me closer to my vision? Does this action get me closer to my vision? And in my vision, I have things like my physical health, my sleep quality, my relationship quality, my financial quality, the impact I'm having in the world with my purpose work. What impact am I having of being of service to others? My time spent in nature. These are all parts of my personal vision, and I have them defined. Just like my DNA is written in my vision now because I am so mindful of it. And you can get there too. So do this, do this, do this. It's fun. And then you're going to start automatically getting like ideas. Ideas will just like show up that you never like you'll take a shower or drive somewhere or do the dishes and you'll get this incredible, amazing idea that you can now take action on that brings your vision closer into your life. But also I want to say like we can say destination on the map. I want that to happen, but it's a process. It's a process. And we want to learn to fall in love with the process. The process takes time. We don't only want to be happy when that thing way over there finally happens. We don't want to fall into that. We want to fall in love with the process. Fall in
Yeah,
love with the
this is what I used to tell. So I raised some Girl Scouts, and I kept them, not every single one, but I had them up through their senior year of high school. And for the last 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years, we were saving money because they wanted to go on a big trip. And I kept telling them, you know, girls, the trip is not really what you're getting out of this. Right. The trip is like our reward for the thing that we're doing. But, you know, all the weekends that we're teaching these classes and you're taking care of little girls and we're, you know, doing Diva for a Day programs, like what you're learning is what we're doing, you know. And I think that's what really resonates for me with you is, yeah, like living the life you want to live is a multi-step process. You know, it's all the things you're doing. So I like the fact that you don't have to think of it as a as like just, you know, the one really hard, shitty thing on my list that I don't feel like doing. You know, it can be a combination of all the things.
It's all of the things. It's a question I ask myself is like the thing that I strategize, this is what I strategize. My strategy is how can I bring more joy and gratitude into my life? I strategize on how to bring these emotions into my life. What brings me joy? How can I experience more gratitude? It is my duty to experience more of that. It is my duty to experience more of that. And that's why I strategize, because guess what happens? When I strategize that, everything else magically seems to fall in place with less effort. The more I fall into joy and gratitude with intention, the easier it is for my vision to come into fruition with less effort. The ideas, the strategies, the people, just every resource I need just shows up. And I notice when I get away from joy and gratitude, everything else, nothing else seems to like line up. And so that's been my personal strategy. Strategize joy and gratitude. And I've set my life up in such a way that makes it easy because of the healing that I've done, the pattern interrupts. If I find myself in a mind where like the thought is going towards something that doesn't serve me, that brings me to a not helpful stress response, then I recognize it and I shift, recognize and shift, recognize and shift. And so, anyway, I could just keep going. I pretty much said everything I was going to say tonight. I'm just rambling on how awesome my life is and how you can do it for your life too now.
Yeah, I really like that. I'm kind of the same way, and there are a lot of situations where my partner and I have some dumb fight, and I'm like, but we already know the answer to this one, right? Like we were just having this conversation tonight. So there's a certain fight that we have again and again that I see myself getting triggered about this, this thing happens. I see myself doing exactly the thing. And then later on, when we like level up and talk about it, I tell him like, I really think if you could just try this thing, if you could try to say just this thing to me right there, I think I could turn around, But he doesn't always believe me. But I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's it. And for some reason, I can't actually do it. But this exact same, we had a similar patterny thing where I was like, oh, you know what? We get in this fight at this time in this place over and over. And so we wrote a post-it note and we stuck a note right in that spot. And it worked great because both for him, he'd be like, oh, this is the thing that I'm supposed to do for Anne. And for me, I'd be like, oh, you're so messed up that you're making your partner write post-it notes for you for when you're crazy, And so for me, it also kind of helped me say, oh, this is that thing again. This is that thing that you keep doing. Cut it out. And I use post-it notes in a lot of situations, just for that kind of same idea.
I love it. And that starts with awareness, right? That actually co-aligns with the three-step process I have for my clients, the three Ds, which is detect, define, download. You detect a pattern that's no longer serving you. That's the awareness piece. You define what you would rather have that pattern and be instead. So when you have the awareness, when that pattern comes up, you say, I've defined for myself that I want to change the pattern. And then downloading the pattern into your subconscious mind by making a new choice. There's many different ways where you can do that, but simply even making a new choice will begin to download the new pattern into your subconscious mind. And so, and that was a perfect example for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious if anyone
And
has
I
any
can tell you that it works because I've
works.
managed it, right? I've managed it.
Yes. I'm curious if anyone has any questions or anything they want to share based on what's I want to hog the floor here. And if you're just here to listen, that's okay too.
I mean, this kind of matches up. Like I read a lot of like therapy books. And I also do a lot of just thinking about my own brain and how my own brain is working, how my body works. And, so many of the things you said just resonated with me. Like one of the things that I really work hard on in my life is I call it joy juice. I don't really know what the real word is, but, doing things that I know bring me joy, like getting in the hot tub, butt rubs, back rubs, sex. I don't know what we call these, like
Miss head massage.
brain things.
Yeah.
Every one of those things, like I can feel my brain making something sound that sounds delicious. And there are similar things. Oh, someone has their hand up. Dan.
David F. Yeah.
Okay, hang on. I'm gonna go find you, David F. I don't know where to find him. David F. Over there in the corner. There we go. I unmuted you, David. There's a, by the
Oh.
way, at the bottom, there's a thing called, I think it's React, and one of the choices on the React panel is raise hand. That's how you do it.
So how do I get the picture to come on?
That is at the bottom. So the bottom left, you'll have audio, which is on now, and then the very next thing will be video. So you say click the button that says video, and that'll. They don't assume that you want us to be seeing you. They
Well, I
assume.
do because I got something to say.
Yes, there we go. There we go.
I don't want you to see my face.
I want to see your face.
Okay, now I was at a Buffalo Wings in Paducah, Kentucky, October 22nd. I am 71 years old, asthmatic, diabetic, triple heart bypass. I was falsely accused and took a plea bargain for something I did not do. It's really affected my life, my personality. But I was sitting there, and I have a very humorous side to me, and I was pretending the governor race was on, and I was pretending to run for governor, and I had my dog, whose name's Shadow, as my coach. And this is on Instagram, David dot Fletcher 7770. Now, I had gone there to research. I've sold professional sports items for the Super Bowl and the World Series. And I'm lonely. Most my family's dead. It's very hard. I've been a pastor, and it's very hard with my unique ethical and spiritual background for people to accept me, because I'm going to transcend to strand. I'm going to transition into spiritual things very quickly. And but anyway, I was sitting there, and a man named Philip Whitnell, very large. He said, "I heard you're a registered sex offender," and that terrified me. And I said, "No, I'm not." And the minute I said that, he was sitting approximately 12 to 20 feet. He came at me with a charge. There was a lady in front of me, and I was sitting down at a table. He knocked that table down. He beat me in the bread, in the head. He fractured my skull. He bloodied my jacket, which had on it Grace Ministries. And I was giving out gospel tracts and talking to people. And one of the things that I brought up was the abolition as a running plank. Two things I brought out, and I was giving these out. These right here. It has the Ten Commandments on the back, a little how to get saved. And that's just evangelism from an evangelical standpoint. And I said, I'd like to, I'm just, this is all joking. But I said, I'd like to run for governor. If I do, I would abolish the tax on tips. And secondly, I would abolish the sex registry, because I think it's unfair and unconstitutional. And I would also make it where if people have a misdemeanor or a felony in cases that they could have that abolished from their record, so they have a chance to start over. Because in my case, I had a Jewish lawyer that told me in writing that my charges could be expunged in 5 years. I could start over and I'd have a clean record. That was not the case. He lied about it. And I went to the courthouse, pulled the records the day that I paid him, and I had to beg him to do it, $500 to go into McCracken County Courthouse in Paducah, Kentucky, and try to get my charges expunged, which he did not show up for. And I wouldn't pull the records. And I asked him, his name's Todd Megabo. I said, "Todd, what the hell are you doing? Why didn't you show up for this?" "Nothing, nothing, nothing, not a word." Well, Todd blew his head out or his heart out, and he killed himself. Now, I have faced a lot. I know everybody in this room has had trials and tribulations and storms. Not a single one of you wouldn't be here. But what I'm saying is, the Southern Baptists with Johnny Hunt and their sex abuse stuff, which I used to be a part of, they've gone through a program now. If you go into their church, they run a background check about anybody. But this guy charged me. He fractured my skull. He bloodied my head. And the only investigation that was done to that night was what a cop did who was on the Paducah, Kentucky police force. And that was it. And I called the prosecuting office, and I called the police office and talked to the tech, "Please investigate this." And they didn't. They never investigated any further. Now, I don't understand why my life, because I don't live in that county, is below the life of a dog or an animal. Because if someone done that to a dog or an animal or a black man my age or a black woman, I think hell would have broke loose.
Okay,
So
so
I'm just astonished that the criminal justice system can actually let a senior adult who is disabled be attacked in public, and they do nothing. And
right, this is where what Jessica was saying earlier comes up, which is she wants to build a system where we have empathy for you instead of hate for you. We want to have a cooperative situation and not a competitive situation. We want to encourage people to empathize with you, and that, instead of spending our time being mad and crabby at the person who hurt us, or the person who instead try to find a way to, like, this guy who has a whole website all about hating people on the registry, he is a hurt person. Something bad happened to this person, and he has not healed from this thing. Because he hasn't healed from this thing, he is being hateful to a perfect stranger simply because you have this scarlet letter on you, you know?
Well, I'm not a registered sex offender.
Well, he thinks you
And
are, though, doesn't he?
beg your pardon?
You and I have had long conversations.
Well, I don't remember it. This is not a subject that I visit often, but I mean, a year and a half I've waited for justice and they declined to even prosecute somebody.
Yeah, no, 100%, because
And
they think.
they say, well, just go sue him. And everything they've talked to me, I
Well,
thought,
honestly, the suing him is that might be our answer. And I talked to Janice Belushi about this.
well,
Sorry
yeah, if
if
I
I.
could get somebody like Janice Belushi.
Well, you might be able to get her, because I literally just brought this up with her in March. I've just been, like, over to the top crazy,
Yeah,
full of
well,
ideas.
I appreciate you guys listening to me and talking to me because I've lived in fear, but I'm in the final years or days of my life. I'm in the sunset and I was robbed of a lot of opportunities, just like other people. And I don't know what the answers are, but I know what living in hell is because I've been there in part. But it seems like for me, it's like kind of like, and I'm not judging or endorsing, I'm just stating an observation. My life is not what it could have been or what it should have been because of false accusations. And I trusted in the cops, I trusted in the attorneys and fear. And I was lied to in writing. And they don't do anything about it. And this guy beat the hell out of me. He fractured my skull, minor fraction. But anyway, people do not understand this unless they've been through it. And they don't want to hear it. And if you mention it, then they will ostracize. I mean, I don't get anywhere to minister or to preach, and up above here, I hope this. Now, I've got a cross. You see the cross? And I've got a Christian tradition. And below it, I have something from the Norse tradition because I'm a European. But I just don't under I really, I heard one of you guys say one night, I don't know who, a lot of this stuff is based on fear and paranoia. It's fear and paranoia and a way for people to get votes in the legislature by building on the fear and
But
paranoia.
the legislature, like, there's, look at the politics right now. Politics is insane. There is no politician in their right mind who's gonna, like, come out for sex offenders. It's just not gonna happen. We've got to change people's minds, and to change people's minds, we've got to get people thinking in empathetic ways. And I
Well,
don't.
Jesus Christ was for sex offenders. Whenever they were going to stone the woman taken in adultery,
Yep. Oh,
you go
absolutely.
and sin no more.
Absolutely. Yeah, Jesus Christ had the right idea for sure.
I mean, I know nothing. I know nothing compared to other people. I mean, I took 90 hours, unaccredited clock hours at Liberty University on human sexuality. And then I've listened and I've learned, but I mean, I heard Martha Blackburn, she's a senator from Tennessee, say there were 400 or 4,000 criminal indictments or prosecutions that were dropped. But I feel like, and I don't want to use, I'll use the word gamer. I feel less than human. I feel kind of Jewish, and it's World War II.
Oof.
I don't know how to, I don't know the right words, but no human should have to do this. And I mean, to me, the Southern Baptists are the largest Protestant denomination, and they're going bananas. The Federal Justice Department just dropped a huge investigation against them about child abuse and other kinds of things, if my information is correct, and I think I'm correct, because Trump's in office, and then a guy named Johnny Hunt, who was former president for the Southern Baptist Convention, he sued because he allegedly kissed or advanced against another female, And they ruined his reputation and put him in the kind of boots I am. I can't get a revival or a place to preach or minister. Now, I've got a different attitude. I don't come in and say, hey, you're all going to hell. I don't do that. I say, to be honest with you, we're all in the same boat. We all have the same humanity, and we're fallen sinners, and God loves you and cares for you. I'm just a compassionate person. I really am, but it baffles my mind. It baffles everything that I know about, or I wouldn't be exposing myself, because I exposed myself one day and kind of just tested some theories on some waitresses, and they, according to the prosecution's office, and I don't care anymore because they ain't gonna do nothing. Those waitresses went to a bartender, a former bartender, a buddy was there, and he was a used guy. He tackled me and beat the hell out of me unexpectedly. You know, I'm.
Okay, so can I get us back to, I would like to hear Jessica's response.
Go ahead, Jeff.
I would, yeah, yes. First, I want to say, David, what you experienced is you didn't deserve any of that at all, and
Thank you.
it was completely unfair and unwarranted for you to have that experience and for you to be attacked in that way. I want to just acknowledge that first before anything. And do you remember that quote I was sharing about we can either live by a story of the past or a vision of the future? We can either live by a story of the past or a vision of the future. And when the story of the past is a scary one, then we will continue to live by fear. When that story of the past is a scary one and we're living there, we will continue to live by fear. This is one of the biggest things that I've done for myself is replacing fear with trust. Replacing fear with trust. And it wasn't easy. It's been a slow process. And like what you said, like you're up there in your age, and you don't want to live in fear. You don't want to live in fear, and you do deserve a better life. And the only way that that's going to happen isn't by waiting for certain X, Y, or Z to change behind the scenes. Get crystal clear on what you want. Get crystal clear on what you want.
Well, I'd like to have a clean record. I'd like to have my all that stuff take away. And then third, in the present moment, we're dealing with the Catholic Church, and I'm generalizing it, and we're dealing with the Southern Baptist, and that's a reflection of our culture. We're dealing with paranoia and John Walsh and a lot of myths. And I don't know what is truth and what is fiction, because every day, in every county, just about every day in a county, they'll charge people with this stuff, and they know they can get a conviction, because most people can't afford $30,000 for a self-defense attorney, and they go down the tubes. And I don't have the answer. I've never been
Yeah.
on here exposed my face before.
I mean, what about something that have you considered? I think moving to a different state where the registry doesn't even exist.
I'm not on the registry.
Or that's right, you're not on the registry.
No, but I'm a preacher. And if
Yeah.
you're a preacher or a minister, I graduated from Mid-Continent University. I attended Southern Baptist Seminary. I've studied under people like Dr. David P. Gushee, a world-renowned ethicist. Now, I have been exposed to highly trained theologians and philosophers. What I'm trying to say is you can't roll back time, and they never forget you. I don't know. I don't know the answer, And one of my questions is, why God? It's really questioned. And I think as a Christian or not a Christian, why does God allow this degree of suffering to go unanswered? Because if you listen to the prosperity gospel preachers, and I'm not going to name anybody, but I get the impression that, oh, God always answers prayer. I'm infertile. My first wife died and she never had a child. I've never had a child. I've never had my own family. And one of the reasons I'm not popular, I believe in in vitro fertilization, which the SBC condemned. I believe in surrogacy. SBC condemned. So is the Catholic. Donor sperm, donor eggs, even if you have the money, candidacy, and time, I know of resolve.com deals with, and I have a website. It's called Infertility Issues and Information About Surrogacy on Facebook.
Yeah.
And
So
I
these are
got
clearly important. These are important things to you then, aren't they?
a well, human reproduction and survival are two of the most in level basic instincts that humans have, regardless of their ethical system.
So
Whatever ethical,
let me
go
share
ahead.
this with you. So no matter who, this is really good for anyone. No matter who we are, when we're in a challenging spot, when we feel stuck, when we're fear-based, or we feel something's there's a way to pull ourselves out of it 100% of the time. One of the answers to that is to do something that takes courage. Do
That's what I did.
something that takes courage, because the more that you define how you want to make an impact in this world, I call it purpose work. The more you step into your purpose work that you want to make an impact, when you put your focus on that, then there's no time or energy left for the story of the past that's still hurting you. There's no time or energy left for the story of the past that's still hurting you. And instead of living in fear and pain of the story and past of the past, you're now living by inspiration for how you're making an impact by showing up with your purpose work. And when you make that the pinnacle of your North Star, you better believe there's going to be some healing that takes place. And the more you put, and so that's something to focus on. Really focus on your purpose work, how you want to make an impact.
Here's some of my art. Now that's Vincent Van Gogh influence, and I got a lot more, but I've been seeing a neurologist and I've been doing a lot of study on the brain.
Beautiful. Yeah. Amazing.
What I do thank you for li who are you exactly?
I'm Jessica Jordan. I live in Northern California in the Redwood Forest. Ooh, that is bright.
Yeah, you're near the Golden Triangle,
the Emerald Triangle.
the Emerald Triangle.
Yeah, which
Yeah,
is the
I
weed
just,
capital of the world for anyone who doesn't know.
yeah, it's a weed capital. But I don't know. Again, I thank everyone in this room for listening to me and letting me speak. But getting your, I've learned this. I mean, the neurologist said this to me, you know, and the cops aren't going to, I don't believe. I used to be a member of the John Birch Society, and I still believe in the Constitution, but I do not believe all police officers are saints. They're just not. And
Correct. Correct.
I saw there's a guy on YouTube. He's called Mr. Constitutional Lawyer, and I saw him do a an interrogation or an investigation or discovery with two Kentucky still police officers. And they clearly beat a man after eating his entering his home, but on under oath they denied it, you know.
Yeah. And so, David, I'm going to do a pattern interrupt. This story that you're saying right now is the exact story that you want to make sure that you are not reading or looking into any of these types of stories. It will keep you living in fear. The moment you dis that you find yourself on YouTube or in the newspaper learning about one of these types of stories or re reliving it in your mind, you are recreating fear in your nervous system. And so these are the exact types of stories to eliminate from your life. Just eliminate it from your life.
Well, I did contact, and I'm gonna take another 60 seconds and I'll be quiet. But there was a man who was on the registry, and I'm an educated person. I took psychology in junior college and I studied Northetic counseling, and I've been a pastor and helped start Christian schools and churches. So that is a foundation. There was a man on the registry in Paducah, Kentucky. And I could see he had social challenges. He was just driving around his car, asking single women for dates or whatever. And two things I'm interested in is single adult ministry and family counseling. I said that to say this: they hounded him enough in the Paducah area offenders, which has now been put closed down for a while, that this guy got arrested. He died in jail, and so. He paid a price, and I told the prosecutor, I said, I don't know him from Adam, but I said, this is a human being. This is a human being. And if you go into the prisons or if you go into the jails,
Are we really treating these prisoners with the qualities that's going to make them humans when they get out, or make them capable of getting jobs and stuff? I don't know, but I do want to have vision. I do want to be trusting, but I got the hell beat out of me for trusting and just exploring. Say, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me, and because I you're a woman, and there are other women here, but I am a heterosexual male, and I'm attracted to, how can I say this? I'm attracted to females with the age of consent and in consensual type stuff. And I am married, but what I'm getting ready to say is, if they can't be consensual, and if they can't, you are being abusive. So I know the common sense, but I got run over and I got destroyed, and I don't think I'm alone. I
You're
think
not alone.
there
You're
are,
right.
I know there's almost 1 million people on the registry, and there are a lot of them, they're not. In this same little town that I'm from, there was a chiropractor. I don't know what he did or didn't do, but he got accused of touching women's, the upper part of their breast during chiropractor adjustment. He had to leave town, you know. So I don't care what level, you know, because I'm a nobody, you know. I'm an idealistic
Well,
person.
let's pause there. You're not a nobody. You are David F, and you have incredible things within you. And you have helped with schools. You said starting building schools. I don't remember what it was. Like, you have done incredible
Christian
things.
schools.
Christian, you aren't a nobody. You are someone who is incredible, who has had valid experiences. There are precious and tender parts within you. You are a valuable human being. You matter. You're important. You're not a nobody. You're not a
Thank you.
nobody.
Thank
And names and titles don't matter. Names and the titles and all the letters behind and those things don't matter. Those
Well,
things
thank
don't
you for
matter.
listening to me. I mean, everybody in here has got pain and hurt and suffering. I know that. I took everything to God, but I opened my mouth up and one time in one place, and I got the hell beat out of me. And there was no, they don't want to do nothing about it. And I think it's wrong. And I'm not the only one. So tell me how to close my camera. I think that's it. Thank you for listening and talking.
Thank you. Thank you, David. Thank you. Thank you. And I wanted to share in the chat a while ago, Pam said it would be great if Jessica could speak to judges and attorneys and the general public about how to think. And so I, as Anne was saying, I last fall, I kind of magically, like whimsically ended up in the governor's office, kind of unplanned, and talked to his like top advisor about this stuff, where there's almost 40 million people in California. And I got to do my real life elevator pitch about how to get this into the judicial system. And as a to essentially, instead of sending men to prison, to have a review and say, hey, it could save the state money and do real legit healing to send them into my program instead. And they ended up, anyway, long story short, it was kind of magical how it happened, how, and I had like, they took me in and I had a whole meeting with, and it got a lot of validation. And there's things that are happening behind the scenes. I'll just say that. And it just something that I learned very recently. Is my dad's oldest cousin. His name's Lee Cotter. He's in Florida. And he happens to be, before he retired, he was the go-to person who would speak to the judges to determine where a person went, whether it was to prison or to a mental facility or to a different place or volunteer. Well, I don't know all the options. But it was my dad's cousin was the determining person who would inform the judge on what treatment this person needed. So I have a family member who still holds weight here. This was a new thing I just discovered. So my dad's cousin, Lee Cotter, is eagerly expecting my phone call, and we're going to have a conversation. So we might have a big name on the inside, starting in California or Florida, I mean. So that's kind of fun. That's hopeful. I'll say that's hopeful. Which, yeah, Anne, I don't know if I shared that with you, but like it's kind of a big deal. You're muted. I don't know what you're saying. I'm not good at reading lips. But ultimately, what I want to do is.
Okay, thank God he finally unmuted me.
There we go.
For some reason, I got on my phone for a minute to travel, and when I got here, it wouldn't let me unmute. Okay, so I have a bunch of things I was going to say. Earlier, I was going to say that having empathy for the people around you, like a video that helped people have empathy for us, that would be a winning way to do it. But I also like here, just go do the things you love, you know, go start schools and do pleasant, positive things. Just now, it was a whole different thing. What were you just now talking about?
Lee Cotter, my dad's cousin, who. Oh,
that's just great. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, and you're, yeah, we got to just help people think differently, because it's not going to be the lawyers. It's not going to be the judges. It's not going to be the lawmakers who think that it's time to like change the registry. We've got to convince people to care. And I just love the way you talk. And I think, you know, that's the way I'm trying to talk to the world. And we're over time, and I'd like to be thankful for people's time. And I couldn't say, hey, we're at 8:30, we should let you go, because I was in the car and it wouldn't let me unmute. I love you, Jessica. Let's touch base one of these days about your project. And you re-inspired me to work on my project, which I hit a little glitch in my project, and the glitch was so, I'm so terrified of the glitch that I've just quit working on it because it's too big and scary every day. But I like the way you talk, and I'm gonna make the space to do the things.
I love it. And I love you.
I love you. I love you, Jessica.
There's just amazing big things.
All right. I can't remember what's happening in 2 weeks, but I have a speaker, and he's gonna be great, or she, whoever it is. I'm in the middle of a bunch of many things. All right. Bye, everybody. I love you.
Bye.
Thank you for coming.
Oh, thank you so much.
Want to save the chat? Go to the top. The chat, and you click the three dots, and then it saves the chat. Slingshot, Linda and Morgan. Hell yeah, do that. Okay, how do I get off?
Thank you so much, everyone, for being here. This was a lot of fun. Thank you so much.